Chile, Brazil, a new laboratory for the far right. The neoliberal model implemented in Chile after the 1973 military coup gives us hints as to what will happen in Brazil under a future Jair Bolsonaro government. The resemblance is no mere coincidence. Still shocked by the electoral results in Brazil, many Brazilians are asking how an avalanche of votes for Jair Bolsonaro and General Hamilton Mourão took place and what exactly will happen when a right-wing extremist government takes over. We are still a long way off from answering this. But the connections between Bolsonaro's main economic guru, Paulo Guedes, and the Augusto Pinochet dictatorship in Chile, 1973-1990, give us important leads about the underlying plans. Until recently, Paulo Roberto Nunes Guedes, 69, was relatively unknown to the Brazilian public. Although he was a columnist for Época magazine and O Globo newspaper and founder of the Millennium Institute, the economist spent decades isolated from the mainstream, rejecting all of Brazil's economic plans for the last 35 years, from those of President José Sarney to Dilma Rousseff. Reading some of his articles, it becomes clear why. Guedes shows an aversion to the social contract guaranteed in the 1988 Constitution, which he interprets as an obstacle to his political project. For him, Brazil suffered from an interventionist curse which has blocked the irreversible evolutionary process towards a great open society. On May Day, 2017, Guedes wrote, "The right-wing hegemony governed for two decades and the left-wing hegemony governed for three, both with a disastrous, interventionist economic model." In his mind, the 30 years of democratic Brazil, from Fernando Collor to Itamar Franco, Fernando Henrique Cardoso, Lula and Lima all comprised part of the same hegemonic left. Looking at this tabula rasa, it's not hard to understand his political preferences. The social rights system guaranteed in the 1988 Constitution may have survived to the present day, at least on paper, but Guedes is part of the group that wants to exterminate it by capitalizing on the authoritarian wave of Jair Bolsonaro. This implies a radicalization and destruction of the democratic contract. But how will he try to do it? From Chicago to Chile. Guedes got his PhD in economics from University of Chicago, a center of Austrian-American neoliberalism dominated by figures like Milton Friedman, in 1978. As Friedman says in his book Freedom of Choice, it was a time in which his apostles were wandering in the desert. Forged in Chicago, Guedes' economically extremist vision has not caught on in Brazil until now. But the contrary happened in Chile. The first laboratory of the shock doctrine, as Naomi Klein designated the process, resulted from the Friedman-Pinochet alliance. It was there that the brothers in faith from Chicago found perfect partners for their economic plans after September 11, 1973. Chilean militarism and fascism promised, at the same time, repression and innovation. The inspiration for Guedes' recent proposals for pension and education reform come from the Pinochet dictatorship, tied to the idea of a subsidiary state, antithetical in many ways to the Brazilian Constitution of 1988. The Chilean Constitution of 1980 was imposed by the dictatorship and preserved to this day. Contrary to the idea of state as guarantor of rights, the subsidiary Chilean state was relieved of the responsibility for promoting welfare to its citizens and converted into a financier for market expansion. This has taken place through massive transfers of public resources to the private sector while generating a perverse public debt. In Chicago, Guedes earned his doctorate with a 63-page, typewritten dissertation. His work, according to Folha de São Paulo newspaper, was never published and had no repercussions in Brazil, which caused him to resent his more successful colleagues. This bitterness became public recently, when he called his ex-student, economist Helena Landau, mediocre, alleging that he had flunked her during her master's degree work at Puke University in Rio. Helena Landau, 9 years younger than Guedes, was one of the most important economists in Fernando Henrique Cardoso's privatizations, coordinating the sale of Eletrobras State Energy Company for the National Destinization Council during the 1990s. With her transcripts in hand, Landau disproved his claim, saying, "It's Paula who was a poor professor. He missed classes and didn't correct papers." Professor Paulo Guedes entered the University of Chile in a suspicious manner during the 1980s, during the height of the dictatorship, after a broad purge of critical intellectuals. As Federico Fulgraf writes, the Chilean dictatorship viewed the universities as one of the main theaters of war, a territory to be retaken from the Marxist enemy. In the place of critics, professors were hired who were aligned with the only school of thought that the military supported in academia. Milton Friedman and his allies had been attracting Chilean economists to Chicago since the 1950s, working to reinsert them into academic positions in the country's main universities. However, it was only with Pinochet that the Chicago Boys' political experiment consolidated. Gages was part of this movement, along with his colleague, the Chilean businessman Jorge Constantino Demetrio Salyumzarur, 67. In returning from Chicago, where he first met Gages, Salyum also joined the Economic Cathedral of the University of Chile. In a few years he became Pinochet's director of budgets and oversaw privatizations of state companies such as Clientra and Entel. At the same time, he built a financial empire which included banks and real estate. Among them, Rupanco, a 47,000-hectare farm which had been redistributed to the workers during the Salvador Allende government, but that was appropriated by the military in 1979 and given to the El Cabildo S.A. Company, which was later taken over by the Salyum family. According to Fulgraf, Salyum is a kind of unofficial spokesman of the hardline Pinochet supporters in the private sector. It was in this manner, taking over the position of a professor who was arbitrarily fired by the dictators, that Gages left his part-time teaching jobs at PUC Rio, IMPA and FGV Rio, in exchange for, according to him, a too-good-to-refuse salary of $10,000 per month. When asked about his ties to the Chilean dictatorship, however, he changes the subject to his supposed academic qualifications and tells a story of how he was once inspected by Pinochet's political police. Private retirement pensions and the shock of poverty. During the years in which Gages lived in Chile, José Piñera, the most powerful Chicago boy and brother of current Chilean President Sebastián Piñera, completely privatized the retirement system through a decree issued by dictator Pinochet on November 13, 1980. In this system, formed today by an oligopoly of six private pension funds, wage earners are required to deliver 10% of their salaries for capitalist speculation with no counterpart from the employer. Currently, after 30 years of contribution, 90% of Chilean retirees receive pension checks worth less than half of the national minimum wage of 154,000 pesos, approximately $220. Symptomatically, the pension system privatization does not apply to members of the military. Driven by the same kind of pro-capitalization rhetoric that paved the way for Michel Temer's failed pension reform efforts in 2017, the Chilean pension system represents the appropriation of more than 10 million workers' retirement funds. Today, five of the six existing pension funds manage 69.6% of the country's GDP and 94.6% of its social security contributions, having accumulated profits of $1.5 million a day in 2017, according to the Sol Foundation. The collection system is based on individualism, not solidarity, because each worker depends exclusively on himself to increase the value of his pension. Furthermore, pensioners are susceptible to market volatility, trapped in the pension fund manager's mathematical models. During recent years, the retirement pension crisis has led to dramatic increases in suicides of Chilean seniors, nearly 1,000 in 5 years. Since 2016, popular anger against the privatized retirement system has caused gigantic street protests, led by the hashtag NoPlusA.F.P movement. In Brazil, the project that would accelerate the deterioration of public welfare was rejected by the population in 2017. But popular resistance was only one of the factors that blocked the Temer government from approving the project, as it was also bogged down in the costly bribery dynamics of a system of corrupt political parties. It is worth noting here that Paulo Gages is under investigation on the federal police's Operation Greenfields, which is investigating fraud in management of private pension funds that generated 6 billion Brazilian reais in profit between 2009 to 2013. There is also evidence of money laundering by the HSM Educational SA company, which paid Gages millions of reais in speaking fees. Gages' privatization crusade finds itself confronted by resistance on the streets on the one hand, and on the other, by a governmental machine which wants a piece of the spoils. This is why he seems to be thinking of the Pinochet era when he calls for a shock of capitalism that can only be imposed through militaristic force, all for his own benefit. Pinochetista clans and big data. The Millennium Institute has an ideological sister organization in Santiago with much more influence over its nation's politics, the Liberty and Development Institute, a private organization run as a company which was founded in 1990 in the luxurious neighborhood of Las Condes. Organized by business leaders and high-level cabinet ministers from the Pinochet administration like Hernán Bucci, Carlos F. Cáceres, Cristian Lerroulet, and Luis Lara Inarroyo, the Institute is recognized for working as a revolving door for business executives from major corporations to enter the government and consolidate their company's market positions from inside the state apparatus. This organization provided 10 important members of the government of President Sebastián Piñera, who recently said, on the economic front, Bolsonaro is heading in the right direction. It is not only the Piñera family, however, who view the emergence of Bolsonaro positively. His right-wing extremist competitor from the 2017 Chilean presidential elections, José Antonio Kast, is the Chilean politician most invested in a partnership. The businessman of German descent was the fourth most popular presidential candidate last year, with 523,000 votes. On October 18, Kast traveled to Rio de Janeiro to meet with Bolsonaro. Afterwards, he published a photo smiling next to the captain in his social media accounts. "Today we met with Jair Messias Bolsonaro and wished him luck in the election. We gave him a Chile jersey so that we can continue strengthening the relationship between both countries and, together, build an alliance that can definitively defeat the left in Latin America," he said. In addition to both being admirers of Pinochet, Kast and Bolsonaro rely on a political strategy based on clans. Senator Felipe Kast, nephew of José Antonio Kast, ran for office as part of the coalition which elected Piñera, and was his planning minister in his previous government. During the primaries, Felipe Kast was supported by Jorge Celaya Maguira, the son of the businessman who studied with Gages, a 37-year-old psychologist who was recently nominated as Piñera's communications secretary. Celaya Jr.'s resume features a diploma from Mirabello University, part of the Laureate, for-profit university multinational, directed by his father, and years of work at Cambridge Analytica. Not less important is the fact that young Selim is the owner of Arthuli, the largest Chilean big data company. If there are signs that the Jair Bolsonaro campaign in Brazil could have been strengthened, as was the case of Donald Trump in the US with the theft of millions of people's personal data from the social media networks, among them WhatsApp, and the dissemination of fake news on a previously unseen scale, the Chilean far-right has all of the tools to do it. A revolving door with private education. The narrow circle of Brazilian and Chilean right-wing extremists closes with the Arab businessman Jorge Celaya, father of Piñera's recently nominated communications secretary. As previously mentioned, Celaya was Gage's classmate in Chicago during the 1970s. During the 1980s, he built an economic empire from the largest financial operation ever to take place in Chile at the time. Together with Las Diez Mesquitas, a consortium of Arab-owned companies, he bought Banco Osorno and sold it to Santander in 1985 for $495 million. At the same time, he served as Pinochet's budget director. Today it is more and more clear that education and culture are priority frontiers for the expansion of neo-Pinochetista business negotiations. Jorge Celaya Jr. created a powerful communications and political marketing machine with Arthuli and spurred the election of 46 mayors from the Partido Renovación Nacional in 2016, using Cambridge Analytica techniques. Furthermore, Banco de Chile and Banco Santander, which together hold at least half of the national population's bank accounts, are among Arthuli's top clients. Meanwhile, Jorge Celaya, the father, has been investing in education for years and is now one of the most influential executives in the for-profit education multinational Laureate, which is being investigated for fraud in the private university accreditation system. In Brazil, Laureate has prioritized distance learning. It is no coincidence that Paulo Guedes defends a shock of digital inclusion in grammar school. Bolsonaro has been talking about distance learning for children in the name of Stavros Xanthopoulos, International Relations Director for the Brazilian Association of Distance Learning, has been cited for education minister in the future right-wing extremist government if the ministry will even continue to exist. What is in store for us? During his first interview with the international press after his connection with Jair Bolsonaro became public in November 2017, Gages said, The last 30 years have been a disaster. We corrupted democracy and stagnated the economy. We should have done what the Chicago boys defended. When asked why he would associate with known defender of the Brazilian military dictatorship, during an event organized by the Credit Suisse Bank in Sao Paulo, Gages classified this type of question as patrolling. In talking about his long conversations with Bolsonaro, he repeated one of his favorite catchphrases, playing on the words on the Brazilian flag, "Who knows if order isn't speaking with progress?" It is not hard to decipher the message between the lines. The first time that Latin America witnessed an organic union between the military and the Chicago boys in a government was in 1973 in Chile, a chapter of history written in buckets of blood. All that is left for Brazilians is to find out what kind of situation this dangerous association will lead to.